Dangerous or miserable condition? Katanchit. Somehow or other. Naratat. From the hellish condition of life. Vimuktaha. Being free. Puna api. Again. Evam. In this way. Samsara udhvani. On the path of material existence. Avartamanaha. Existing. Naralokasa artam. The field of self-interested material activities. Upayati. He enters. Evam. Thus. Uparhi. Above. In the higher planetary systems. Agataha api. Although promoted. So translation, when the conditioned soul accepts the shelter of the creeper of fruit of activity, he may be elevated by his pious activities to higher planetary systems and thus gain liberation from hellish conditions. But unfortunately, he cannot remain there. After reaping the results of his pious activities, he has to return to the lower planetary systems. In this way, he perpetually goes up and comes down. You can repeat, when the conditioned soul accepts the shelter of the creeper of fruit of activity, he may be elevated by his pious activities to higher planetary systems and thus gain liberation from hellish conditions. But unfortunately, he cannot remain there. After reaping the results of his pious activities, he has to return to the lower planetary systems. In this way, he perpetually goes up and comes down. So purport by his divine grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. In this regard, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Ramanda Vramate Kona Bhagruhan Ji Guru Krishna Prasade Hoy Vakti Lata Veja. That's from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Leela, 19th chapter, text 151. Even if one wanders for many millions of years, from the time of creation until the time of annihilation, one cannot get free from the path of material existence unless one receives shelter at the lotus feet of a pure devotee. As a monkey takes shelter of the branch of a banyan tree and thinks he is enjoying, the conditioned soul, not knowing the real interest of his life, takes shelter of the path of karma kanda, fruit of activities. Sometimes he is elevated to the heavenly planets by such activities, and sometimes he again descends to earth. This is described by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Brahmanda Brahmate. However, if by Krishna's grace, one is fortunate enough to come under the shelter of the Guru, by the mercy of Krishna, he receives lessons on how to execute devotional service to the Supreme Lord. In this way, he receives a clue of how to get out of his continuous struggle up and down within the material world. Therefore, the Vedic injunction is that one should approach a spiritual master. The Vedas declare, Tvad Vigyanartham Sagurum Eva Vilachet. That's from the Mundaka Upanishad 1.2.12. Similarly, in Bhagavad Gita, in the 4th chapter, text 34, the Supreme Personality of Godhead advises, Tvad Vidhi Prani Patena. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master, inquire from him submissively, and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, 3rd chapter, text 21, gives similar advice. Tasmad gurum prapadyeta jyasu shreya utamam shabde pare janishna tam raman rupa sha mashrayam. Any person who seriously desires to achieve real happiness must seek out a bona fide spiritual master and take shelter of him by initiation. The qualification of his spiritual master is that he must have realized the conclusion of the scriptures by deliberation and be able to convince others of these conclusions. Such great personalities will have taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, leaving aside all material considerations, are to be understood as bona fide spiritual masters. Similarly, Vishwanath Chakravarti, a great Vaishnava, also advises, Yasya prasadad bhagavat prasadaha. By the mercy of the spiritual master, one receives the mercy of Krishna. This is the same advice given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Guru Krishna prasade hoy. Bhakti prasadish. This is essential. One must come to Krishna consciousness, and therefore one must take shelter of a pure devotee. Thus one can become free from the clutches of matter. So Om Ganat Timadanda Shah Granjana Shlakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Put everyone to sleep. So what is being described here is the process of being a karmi. Actually, it's very interesting that sometimes we refer to those who are not Krishna conscious as karmis, right? But technically speaking, in most cases, it's not true. In most cases, those who are not Krishna conscious, at least in the Western world, well, practically everywhere in the world, they're what we call vikarmis. There's a difference between karma, vikarma, and akarma. Krishna makes this distinction in the Gita. Of course, karma means exactly what's been described here in this verse, the karma kanja practice, which means following strictly Vedic injunctions in the section of the Vedic literatures known as the karma kanja section. There's karma kanja section, jnana kanja section, which is meant for attaining knowledge and ultimately mukti, and then there's the upasana kanja section, which is meant for devotional service. So, the karmis actually are ones who follow very strictly these injunctions in the karmakanda section. It's not only following the four regulated principles and all that other stuff, but there's a lot of stuff that one has to follow. I mean, one has to perform the different samskaras properly. One has to do the pinda for his forefathers properly. One has to say certain prayers at certain times of the day. I mean, it's much more complex than the process of bhakti that we're following right now, the karmakanda practice. And you see great saintly kings would perform different activities under the jurisdiction of this karmakanda practice, and the Ashwamedha sacrifice, or the Golmedha sacrifice, or the Rajasuya sacrifice. Of course, the Rajasuya sacrifice can only be performed by someone who is an emperor of the whole world. It's interesting. Like, before you perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, you have to send out a challenge horse. Lord Ramchandra did this. And it's not that the horse challenges people. It's the horse has on his head the writings, anyone who impedes my progress will have to face the army of the king who is attempting to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. And so, Lord Ramchandra did this. Of course, his horse was impeded by Lavan Kush, his two sons. And ultimately, they gave the horse back. So it's quite a complex process. And as mentioned here, and also in the Bhagavad Gita, that when your good karma runs out, let's say you've acquired all this good karma, and it runs out, guess what happens? Shine punye marcha lokam vishanti. That's Bhagavad Gita. That again, one comes down to this earthly planet. So it's like a seesaw, or like a roller coaster, or like a merry-go-round, or whatever you call it, that up and down, as Srila Prabhupada mentions. And not only that, that's if one performs the karmakanda practice, or practices properly, but if one makes one little mistake, like, mistake means you don't mean to make the mistake, or just by accident you make the mistake, then you can have very negative effects from the process. The example in the Srimad Bhagavatam is the example of King Riga. King Riga was performing karmakanja activities, and he was giving many cows away to Brahmins. And as everybody knows the story, that by accident one of the cows wandered back into his herd, and he gave that cow away twice. That's called an Indian giver. Anyway, he gave the cow away twice, and as a result of that, he got to become a what in his next life? Anyone knows the story?
Lizard.
A lizard in his next life. You just one little mistake, you know, innocent, honest mistake. You hear this all the time. I made an honest mistake. So that's the danger in the karmakanda practice. And also gyanakanda practice too. You know, and also if one's a Mayavadi, one has to be very strict. And if one makes a little mistake, one has to do all this prayaschitta, that means atonement. And in any case, it's very, very dangerous to do these things, to perform these activities. However, because one is attached to material things, then one is just impelled to keep continually performing these karmakanja activities because of nunam pramataya kurite vikarma yadindriya priti apranoti, because one considers the satisfaction of his senses. And actually there's a lot of allurement that's offered in the karmakanja practice. It's not that you simply go to the heavenly planets and it's like Hawaii or something. In the heavenly planets, you're greeted, it's described, if you actually do the karmakanja practice properly, you're greeted by all these celestial maidens. They're called apsaras. And they basically fight over you. I mean, that's similar to what many Muslims believe, that if you do a... they have a misconception of jihad. We'll talk about that in a second. But if you fight, you know, a religious war and you die, then you're going to be greeted by so many celestial virgins. Of course, it's never described who becomes the virgin. You know, I wouldn't want to be one of those fighting over some holy warrior. So in any case, it's very similar conception that they're fighting over you, you know, oh, he's mine, and that's sort of an allurement for those in the mode of passion. So there's a lot of carrots that are dangled in front of people. And, of course, in the heavenly planets, there's no disease, there's no old age, people don't smell bad, mangoes are as big as the Empire State Building or the Twin Towers, as they used to be, and they have no skin on them, and there's rivers of mango juice. I mean, it's like every person's dream come true, isn't it? So you hear about these things, and wow, Swarga, I really want to go there. And but there's problems there too. I mean, you may think the only problem is that when your good karma runs out, you have to come back here. But there's problems. There's envy there. The demons are attacking sometimes. I mean, Indra, in spite of having performed 100 horse sacrifices to get there, is quite an envious chap because he gets worried when someone else wants to take his position. Like there's stories that when kings start to perform close to 100 horse sacrifices, which is the requirement for becoming Indra. Indra sometimes steals the horses or interferes with the horse sacrifice, like in the case of Maharaj Prithu. He did that. So there's, you know, there's envy there and competition. It's not that they're completely freed from material miseries. And sometimes there's even stories about one demigod stealing another demigod's wife. You know, really hellish things are happening there. So there is no utopia in the material world like that. Even the heavenly planets are not like that. But still, one continues to do these things, and basically, there's no way out. Either karma activities or re-karma activities or materialistic activities. There's no way out because one doesn't have a higher understanding. So therefore, it is required to come in contact with Krishna's devotee who, instead of planting the karma bija in your heart or jnana bija in your heart, bija means like a seed. Sometimes it's described as a creeper, but technically speaking, the Sanskrit word means seed. And we're having these seeds planted in our hearts by association. Krishna also says in the Gita, what is it? Karnam gunasangasya sadasa janma janrishu. That the cause of our entanglement is gunasanga. In other words, we're associating with certain people, certain types of food, which are also described in the Gita, certain types of activities. And those activities, people, food, etc., are all implanting within our hearts different seeds of different desires. That's why Lord Chaitanya said the first principle of being a Vaishnava is a satsanga chag, a Vaishnava char, to give up bad association. Because if you don't give up bad association, in spite of performing bhakti, you get all these seeds, karma bija, jnana bija, in your heart. And these seeds choke off, even if you have the bhakti lata bija, you're fortunate enough to have it, these seeds choke off the main creeper of devotion. And if you're not expert, you're going to think the seeds, or the creepers, the karma bija or the jnana bija, are the creeper of devotion. That's actually very common. That's described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur when he talks about anarthas. He says that anarthas come from the performance of bhakti. In other words, while one performs bhakti, if one's not careful, one can actually cultivate. You need some help with that? Okay. Let the sun shine in. Or the air. So, yeah, wait till the end before you ask questions. One can actually cultivate these other creepers, and then if one's not an expert gardener, one will not be able to identify what is a creeper of devotion and what is a creeper of jnana or karma or some other desire, some anartha like that. So one has to be very expert. So the question arises, as Prabhupada points out here in the verse, that one must come in contact with a guru or with a pure devotee in order to get that bhakti lata bija. Now, the question is, why must one come in contact with a pure devotee? Because you're already in contact with Supersoul. Isn't it? Supersoul is in your heart. So why can't he just give you the bhakti lata bija? You know, why do you have to worry about, you know, wandering around all these universes and finally encountering some pure devotee, which is very rare? Vasudeva Sarvamiti Sa Mahatma Sadurlaba, as described in the Gita. So why is that? That's described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also, that he says that Krishna doesn't give the bhakti lata bija, which is quite really interesting. That bhakti, he describes bhakti, the energy of devotion, as being independent. Independent in the sense that, of course, no one is independent from Krishna. I mean, at least ontologically. But Krishna has given her, bhakti is actually feminine. Krishna has given her independence. And where does she reside? She resides in the heart of a pure devotee. So when you come in contact with a pure devotee, then you get bhakti. So bhakti, you have to come in touch with a pure devotee to get bhakti. So then the question is, how do we get in touch with a pure devotee? And then also, then the super soul comes into play at that particular juncture. Because the super soul guides one when one is ready to come in contact with a pure devotee. Sometimes devotees would ask the questions, what if someone is situated somewhere on this earth planet where there's no devotees? You know, they're talking about China where there were previously no devotees, or Soviet Union where there's no devotees. Then What will happen to such a person? First of all, if one doesn't come in contact with devotees, it's due to their desire. Secondly, if one has the desire, Krishna will make the arrangement even in the darkest regions of the Amazon jungle for one to come in contact with devotees. I mean, there's that story of when Prabhupada was on an airplane and Prabhupada was eating his chidwa, which is the puff rice preparation. The stewardess just walked up and looked at the chidwa and thought, how delicious, and she took a piece of it, put it in her mouth, of course, right from Prabhupada's plate. But still, it was his remnant. And somehow or other, she had some desire to get out of this material world, and she got her bhakti lata bhi just by taking Prabhupada's remnants. Of course, that's pretty good. Take sure the Prabhupada's remnants. And then what happened is that later on, when the devotees were on Sankirtan in the deepest, darkest jungles of Brazil, the Amazon jungle, they came across this lady who had all Prabhupada's books. She was older by that time. And she was had deities on her altar and everything like that. And they asked her, you know, how did you come in contact with Krishna consciousness? And she described that, you know, I took Mahaprasadam from Prabhupada on the airplane. So Krishna will make the arrangement. If someone doesn't have the opportunity, it's not simply accidental. Nothing happens, or not a blade of grass moves, as they say, without the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if you actually are ready, by the mercy of Krishna, one gets guru. But you have to want that mercy. At least you have to be frustrated, crying out, you know, God save me, God help me, and then Krishna will send the guru. And then when Krishna sends the guru, of course you also have to ascertain whether guru is bona fide. Prabhupada also makes this point indirectly in the purport. Because sometimes Krishna sends bogus guru, because that's a contradiction. Like, Prabhupada says no such thing as a bogus guru, because that's an oxymoron. You know, it's a guru, if it's bogus, it's bogus. Or someone who portrays themselves as a guru would be more accurate, nomenclature. I was reading about the activities of the anti-cult people, and there was one lady, it's actually a video, and one lady who used to be a member of this organization where they thought that God appeared in Korea, which would be interesting. God appeared in Korea and, modern day incarnation of Jesus Christ. And then if you got married, God had to try out your wife before you got to have a relationship with. I mean, just really bogus stuff that people believe in. Or so many different bogus groups. I mean, the majority, like Prabhupada said, practically every week there's a God coming from India. I mean, the one God I mentioned was coming from Korea, so there was even a exception to the Indian gods. And of course, I remember in the 1960s, there was this young man, 16 or 17 years old, who declared himself to be God, ran away with his secretary, had many followers. His mother took him to court and said, this son is not God, it's actually my other son is God. So, Prabhupada said, there are so many cheaters, and if you want to be cheated, then, you know, Krishna will send a cheater. It's as simple as that. Krishna's the greatest of all the cheaters. You want to cheat Krishna? Krishna will play pin the tail on the donkey with you, and you'll be the donkey. You won't be playing the game, you know. You'll be the donkey who gets the tail pinned on you. So, really, it requires some intelligence to ascertain. Just like I remember, also before I came to the movement, I went to different spiritual groups. One was a group, I'm not going to mention the name, where they said their leader was God, and he undertook a vow of silence for like 20 or 30 years, and when he was going to open his mouth, he was going to speak something, he was going to change the whole world. Unfortunately, he died before he opened his mouth. So, and he had, you know, it's really amazing what people believe. You know, people really believe. Even I was watching one expert hypnotist, and he was able to induce pseudo mystical or religious experiences in people. Very, very interesting to see how people can be cheated very, very easily. And that's based on their desire. But anyway, we have to have intelligence to ascertain what is a bona fide, or who is a bona fide guru. And there's many injunctions. Prabhupada cites several of them here. It says, the qualification of the spiritual master, you must have realized the conclusion of the scriptures by deliberation. Now that's interesting. Deliberation means that he's not a blind follower. Of course, you see this illustrated to the greatest degree in the pastimes of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Whereas Bhaktivinoda Thakur was, of course, he's a pure Nityasiddha devotee, we understand that. But his pastimes were that he really was more into, like, Western things in the beginning, you know, Thoreau and all these other people. He was studying the Western authors. He was very much apparently enamored, not actually enamored by them. And then by studying these literatures, and he actually even rejected Vaishnava philosophy in the beginning because he considered it very sentimental. Until he came to the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And so he approached it from a very open, with a very open mind and deliberation and everything like that. And of course in the pastimes of Prabhupada, you actually see this with many great devotees. Like Prabhupada first was apparently a follower of Gandhi, and then he was able to understand the truth of Vaishnava literature because he came in contact with Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Of course, he's also an absolute pure devotee. He's a pastime. So we see this. This is very common that in the history of many great devotees that they actually deliberate before they actually accept Krishna consciousness completely. And Prabhupada said, doubt is a sign of intelligence. Of course, if you have too much doubt, like Krishna says, the doubting soul is happiness neither in this world nor in the next. I mean, that's another statement. But at least before one comes to Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada also said, blind following an absurd inquiry are to be condemned. So one has to really examine things very, very carefully, or otherwise you can get cheated. So as far as the guru, there's many standards of judgment. I mean, of course, not only the ones mentioned here, but there's tadviganartam sagurumeva bigachit samitpani shvachim brahmanishtam, that one must be a servant of his spiritual master. This is actually perhaps, I would say, the most essential quality, because based on what Prabhupada said, quoting Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur at the end of the purport, yasha prasada bhagavat prasada, that one gets Krishna's mercy if one pleases the spiritual master. So the word samitpani means basically one who fetches water and firewood for the spiritual master, one who is a servant of the spiritual master. Because servant of the spiritual master means, basically, like Prabhupada describes, servant means to do what the spiritual master wants. Prabhupada gave the example, if the spiritual master asks for water and you bring him milk, thinking, this is better. Yeah, I'm gonna actually do better than what the spiritual master wants. Prabhupada said that's not service. So we have to really ascertain what the spiritual master wants, and one who is doing what the spiritual master wants, the desires of the spiritual master, is actually a bona fide disciple and can become a bona fide spiritual master. Just like Rupa Goswami, we find, of course, we are all disciples of Srila Rupa Goswami. He's our, in one sense, the founder and acharya of this branch of the disciplic succession, coming from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Rupanugas. Rupa Goswami is described as Sri Chaitanya Manovishnam because he understood Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desires. In other words, Manovishnam, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desires. Stapitam yena bhutale, swayam rupa gada mayam dadati swapadantikam. Therefore, that's the standard, you know, samitpani or Manovishtam, which is very similar, understanding the desires and acting as a servant. So, Samitpani Shrotyam Brahmanishtam, the other qualities are must have heard nicely, which is what Prabhupada says here also. Realize the conclusion of the scriptures, and then be able to convince others of these conclusions. Of course, realized means actually to have realization, and also be able to convince others. So, of course, the spiritual master generally acts, even if he is a uttama adhikari, he acts as a madhyama adhikari in order to preach Krishna consciousness. So, with great intelligence, we should ascertain who is a bona fide spiritual master. And of course, in the movement, in our Krishna consciousness movement, we accept Prabhupada, and we accept guidance from other spiritual masters. We may have many Siksha gurus as well as our Diksha guru. And Prabhupada did advise us to accept and approach previous acharyas too. After we have perused, understood Srila Prabhupada's books, Prabhupada did enjoin us to study the works of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and other great spiritual masters in our disciplic succession. Of course, Prabhupada's books always should remain the central point. One time Prabhupada asked, I think it was Brahmananda, he said, he asked Brahmananda, like, who is your favorite author, or something like that. And Brahmananda said, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, or something like that, and I forget the exact answer, and Prabhupada wasn't too pleased with that. Prabhupada wanted us to consider him the primary source of siksha, and to see and approach the past acharyas through Prabhupada's guidance. Now this is important too, not that there's something different. Prabhupada is not presenting anything different than what the past acharyas presented. Just like I was, you know, many devotees are concerned about where the jiva came from or anything like that, you know, very controversial thing, and people arguing this way and that way. Well, I just read the Jiva Dharma, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes it very clear that the jiva was with Krishna before, was Krishna conscious, and Bhavimukhi turned his face away deliberately from Krishna. I mean, it's very clear, the Jiva Dharma. If you actually go into the original language of the Jiva Dharma, very, very clear. So Prabhupada didn't change in any sense the Siddhanta, but Prabhupada adjusted the details in the application. So we have to really understand that Prabhupada's adjustment of the details and application are what we follow insofar as presenting Krishna consciousness to others. I mean, we can adjust the little aspects of the details, not big aspects. It's not that we should have Mangalarti with English prayers or something like that. But we can, you know, there's certain little things we can adjust, you know, maybe it's some instrumentation or something like that. But, you know, Prabhupada is our founder, Acharya. And so, but Prabhupada did want us to approach other great personalities for guidance. It's not that we're an isolated, not our Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, we're an isolated branch of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. We're connected with the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, and we're meant to understand our connection and how the Krishna consciousness movement fits in with that connection. So anyway, so these are some of the points. So we take shelter of the pure devotees, specifically Srila Prabhupada, and therefore we give up these desires for fruitive gain in this world and also for liberation, and ultimately we come to the point of wanting pure devotional service. So any questions or comments? Yes.
Come and lead me. You said that it's amazing that what people will believe.
Yeah, I'm amazed. I'm shocked sometimes.
But any logical thinker, if they would read Srimad Bhagavatam, they would say that too, right? It's amazing what these people believe.
Yes. Therefore, we have this injunction that, you know, don't talk about the glories of the holy name or the intimate aspects of Krishna consciousness to those who are faithless. We wait until they get some purification. When people get purification, then they can begin to understand these things. I mean, I gave the example yesterday, I was talking to some people. Just like when I first came to the Krishna consciousness movement, one of the things that really freaked me out was deities. You know, I have to be honest about it. I come from a Jewish background, and we do have the Ten Commandments. And so, you know, Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill. Of course, the only one I didn't follow was honor thy father and mother. So that one I didn't like. But we have the graven images type of thing. So you know, I said, wow, what's happening here? So I wasn't ready for that sort of stuff. So therefore, when I joined the movement, I picked a temple where there were no deities. There was a picture on the altar. That I could accept. You know, picture of Panchatattva dancing. So in presenting Krishna consciousness, we really have to be careful not to present too much that people need the purification and the realization to understand these things. I mean, there are some really far out things that we have in Krishna consciousness. You know, the deities. I mean, for example, I go through the airport sometimes and I go through security and they want to see my Sheilas that I travel with. And they open up the little box and they, or can, and they look at the Sheilas and they practically have a heart attack. You know, they think I'm weird, mentally ill or something like that, because I have these stones with eyes on them, with dresses and crowns and flutes and a whole bag full of more clothes for them. I mean, how can they understand these things? And so, they say, what's this? And I say, sacred stones. Oh, yeah, okay. You can go on the plane, you know. At least they know I'm not a terrorist. So we have to... We have to be careful, but when one has the process of purification, which I had a little bit of it, so now I accept deities after all these years in the Krishna consciousness movement. But in the beginning, it was very hard. You know, there's a lot of things I had trouble with, the scientific things too, which I don't describe right now. All there is to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jai Radha Gulukananda Ki Jai Gaur Premananda. Hare Hare Gaur. Morning. Govindam Hari Purusha.